disturbing discovery at an abandoned mobile home park.
Another suicide.
The nation's suicide rate is at its highest point since 1986.
When police came to the house, they saw tons and tons of trash. Turns out the daughter is a hoarder.
Crews made the gruesome discovery today inside a home.
They had 70 cats and dogs, mostly dogs. They found one deceased kitten inside the home.
A woman was found dead in a local home. That house had been tented for fumigation work.
The following is a true story. Names and locations are kept anonymous in order to protect the privacy of those involved.
I'm your host, Vanessa Fearson, and this is a true story. When you're a crime scene cleaner, there may be days between jobs. Sometimes it's many days and sometimes few. It's hard to predict when tragedy will strike, and so you have to be ready for it at any time. But when you start the day with nothing on the books, well, it's easy to stress out about where the next paycheck is coming from. This particular day was one of those days. I awoke like any other, poured some coffee, got the kids up, dressed, and out the door to school, and then I sat down at my desk and wondered how I was going to get some jobs on the board. Well, that problem was about to be solved by the old Grim Reaper himself. The phone rang and I quickly answered it. The caller was an elderly gentleman and informed me that his wife had committed suicide and he needed our services. I told him not to worry and we were on our way. We contacted a babysitter to pick up the kids from school just in case we weren't back in time. We hopped in the truck and headed to the job. When we arrived on site, we were greeted by the man who had called us. He was understandably not very talkative, and he quietly led us to the back bedroom. There was a trail of blood drops down the length of the hallway, which is not a typical sight on a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Usually, it's a one-and-done kind of situation. We noted it and continued to the bedroom, where we were introduced to what was left of this poor guy's better half of over 40 years. The moderate puddle of blood and lack of spatter on the walls immediately told us that the caliber of the gun that was used wasn't very large. Lying in the middle of the puddle was an oxygen mask and tube running to a tank sitting next to the bed. We told him to go have a seat in the living room and we'd take care of everything. He said okay and quietly left us to our work, but he didn't stay away long. After a few minutes, he stood in the doorway watching for a moment, and then began asking us questions about our procedure, etc. I'm very aware of how uncommon our industry is to most people, but it never ceases to amaze me how someone who has just suffered the tragic loss of a loved one can be so curious at a time like this. I suppose it's something to take your mind off the situation, though. We answered his questions and tried not to engage too much in conversation. I hate the idea of someone seeing something in the state of shock and then not being able to unsee it later. I've experienced similar times where someone would talk as if nothing had happened and then suddenly burst into tears. This creates a conflict for me because it makes me want to throw an arm around their shoulder and comfort them. In addition to being in full gear with blood on my gloves, my training taught me not to. I know it sounds cold-hearted, but I'm not the right person to console them. I mean, what if I accidentally or inadvertently say something to make it worse? Or what if I don't say the right thing? The truth is I'm there to do a job and leave them to their grieving and healing. I mean, don't get me wrong, I've hugged and cried with many of our clients. So that's not the issue. That being said, if any of our clients want to talk to us while we work, we're not going to clam up and ignore them. Which turned out to be good because this was one of those guys. He wanted to talk. After we answered his questions, he, like most, told us the story of what happened. It wasn't a long story, so I won't try to pretty it up for you here. In fact, it was surprisingly short and yet said so much at the same time. His wife had been diagnosed with cancer some time ago. Despite treatment, she didn't respond, and it developed into stage 4, which, in case you're not familiar, well, that's the wrap up all your affairs stage. At this time, professionally assisted suicide was still illegal in California, So when the pain and misery got to be too much to bear, well, she decided to assist herself. Now, I'm not one for controversy and drama, so I won't really get into the rightness or wrongness of her decision. I will say that I understood her decision, and having learned that, I understood why he was not as despondent as one would expect. He went beyond just telling us this story and being nice. He very quickly started joking with us and telling us stories about how she used to get on his case about one thing or another. Despite my best efforts, I found myself laughing along with him at some of his anecdotes. You could tell he had loved her and missed her greatly already, but you could also see that he was happy his wife's suffering had finally ended. Whatever you may believe about what happens after this life, well, it has to be better than going through what she had been. Or at least I hope it is. He seemed comforted by our laughter and returned to the living room as we completed our cleanup, which was mostly cutting out and disposing of carpet. It's strange to me that sometimes something so typically tragic can be cleaned up so quickly and easily. We wrapped up and headed home after a fairly short cleanup. Now, before I go on, I want to tell you a bit of an oddity about our business, or at least it's something I've noticed. I have no idea if anyone else in any other industry experiences this, or even if other crime scene cleaners do. But for us, it's a maxim that all of our jobs come in twos. For example, we'll get a decomp where the decedent was an elderly woman who passed away in her sleep and was discovered relatively quickly, so there wasn't a whole lot of body fluids to be cleaned up. Within the next week or so, usually within 3 or 4 days, well, we'll get another decomp where the decedent was an elderly gentleman who passed away in his sleep, was discovered relatively quickly, so there wasn't a whole lot of fluids to be cleaned up. You see, there's always some significant detail or circumstance that is or is nearly identical to the first. The few exceptions to this rule are usually homicides or rifle suicides. But for the most part, it's held true for us. The two decomps I just mentioned, that was a real example. Now, please pardon the tangent here, but when we responded to the second of the two decomps, we met his middle-aged daughter on scene. According to her, she had not spoken to her father in over 4 years because of some fight they had about something. She couldn't even remember what. And now it was too late for her to make up with him. She would never have the chance to share another laugh with him. She would never again hear him tell a story he had told 100 times before. She would never get the chance to say she was sorry. I only bring this up because the first guy I told you about today had the chance to make his peace with his wife. He would always miss her, but she had left him without any unanswered questions or unspoken truths. This other lady would never get that, and it was over something so stupid she couldn't even remember what it was. I guess my point is, life is long until it ends, and only then do you realize how short it really is. It's far too short to hold on to senseless disagreements. So make your peace with those you love now and live the rest of your life continuing it. Trust me, in this job you see all kinds of pain and heartache, and one of the most tragic is the regret of not having been able to say you're sorry. If you're enjoying this episode, I want to take a moment to tell you about Resonate Recordings. Resonate Recordings edited, mixed, mastered, and produced the episode you're currently listening to. They offer professional podcasting services to podcasters all over the world. Editing, mixing, mastering, custom production, sound design, music creation, hosting setup, and even RSS feed configuration are just a few of the services they offer. If you're considering starting a podcast or want to increase the quality of your podcast, go to resonaterecordings.com to see how they can save you time and help take your podcast to the next level. Resonate Recordings has a professional team of experienced audio engineers, producers, and musicians who all have a passion for podcasting. Right now, my listeners can go to resonaterecordings.com and get their first episode produced for free. No commitments, no strings attached. You too can have an expertly crafted podcast at no risk to you. So what are you waiting for? Go to resonaterecordings.com and complete the form at the bottom of the page. Just tell them Vanessa sent you. Now back to the show. prove what I said earlier about things coming in two, well, shortly before we got home from the first cleanup, I got another call for a suicide. The lady on the phone informed me that her husband had shot himself and they needed our services. I know it seems like a bit of a stretch to connect these two as I described, but stay with me. We called the babysitter. Luckily, she was still available and understanding of our situation, so we rerouted to our second job of the day. We arrived on scene in a familiar area. We were met by the woman who had called us, and she led us into the house. We walked past a group of solemn and grieving family members gathered in the living room. As we approached a door, she stepped aside and pointed to it. Taking our cue, we opened the door and stepped in. We found ourselves in a bedroom. Nothing was amiss or seemingly out of place. There were no clothes piled on the floor, no trash overflowing the trash can. The bed was made. It was picture perfect. However, once I stepped all the way into the bedroom, I saw the bathroom within, and I saw why we were needed. Immediately inside the bathroom door was a floor vent. Seeping into the vent was a large puddle of congealed blood, so bright red it almost seemed fake. Darker red spattered the walls and ceiling, and of course there was the glue-like substance, which was his brain, sprinkled throughout. The scene was still fresh, so the metal scent of blood was heavy in the air. After we got set up, I noticed that not all was fine in the bedroom. There was a slight mist of blood on the bed and the carpet outside of the bathroom. We removed the comforter and contaminated sections of the carpet and then moved into the bathroom. The first step was to spread an absorbent onto the area of the floor thick with blood. This would allow us to easily remove the blood that hadn't yet dried. At some point while we were working, the bedroom door opened and there stood a man. He was curious to see how our job was done. He didn't ask to stay and watch, but did so just the same. Once again, I understood the curiosity, but I couldn't see how anyone could watch the last remains of a family member being wiped off the walls. However, he didn't seem affected by it. There were no red-rimmed eyes, no fistful of tissue, or hiccups in his voice. A funny thing about death is that everybody grieves differently. Often there's tears and tissue, but I've seen the polar opposite. I've seen family gathered in the living room and throwing back beers, laughing and telling jokes as if it was a Friday night like any other. The first time I saw it, I was taken aback. How could someone be so joyous in the face of death? Then I realized that they probably weren't reveling in the person's death. They were celebrating the person's life. It's not my place to judge, but in a world where we're told that sadness is a mental disorder, maybe it's not such a bad idea to celebrate someone who's passed. Not that they're now gone, but that we had the chance to know and be with them. Just a thought. Anyway, I felt it would be rude to tell him to get out. And who knows? If it turned out to be therapeutic for him, it would be the second time today. And it's surprisingly rewarding to help those in need. I didn't say anything, but he took my silence as consent, I suppose, and he watched us work for a while. He asked us a couple of simple questions while we were cleaning, and I obliged him with simple answers. Once his questions were spent, well, he started to give answers. Answers to my unasked questions. The victim was an older gentleman on the cusp of his twilight years. From the time he was a teenager, he suffered headaches, mind-numbing migraines. They weren't constant, but they were consistent. As time went on, they got worse. He went to a doctor and was given every prescription under the sun, moon, and stars. Ibuprofen, acetaminophen, Vicodin, Oxycontin, nothing helped. They got so bad that he was eventually prescribed morphine, which only made them worse. X-rays and CAT scans were done and all found nothing. At that point, the headaches just became something he lived with. When they came on, he went down and didn't come up until it was gone. Sometimes it was a month between headaches, other times it was just days. Toward the end, the headaches became more and more frequent. His family got worried that he would take drastic measures to end these headaches, so they took away his only two guns and removed them from the home. More time had passed with more headaches, and finally, he couldn't stand it anymore. One of his sons was home with him, and he called his mother to say he was worried about him. This headache seemed different, Dad was pacing back and forth and was deliriously trying to plead with the headache to just go away. His mother assured him that the guns were out of the house, but she would be home as soon as she could. Unfortunately, she was wrong. Not all of the guns were out of the house. He had one gun that nobody knew about hidden somewhere in his bedroom. He closed the bedroom door, went into the bathroom, and took the one pill that would finally make the headache go away for good. As a kid, I got headaches often, and my parents were completely against drugs, including over-the-counter pain relief. My only option was to put a cool washcloth on my head and lay down. I remember one year it was Halloween, and I was at a friend's house with a bunch of other kids, and we were passing the time until it got dark. My head started to hurt, and it got progressively worse. I asked my friend's mom for a washcloth and a place to lay down, and she told me to lay my head on the sofa. The pain got so bad that the noise from the other kids' excitement, the light, the smells of my costume, face makeup, and whatnot all made me cry. But the more I cried, the worse my head hurt. I begged this lady to call my mom. My mom couldn't believe I was going to miss Halloween since it was my favorite. But she picked me up and brought me home where I slept it off with my head sandwiched between two pillows. Getting back on track again, suicide is a subject we encounter often. Until today, I had never seen a situation where it was understandable. Today was two separate incidents that put me on the fence. On one hand, I've had migraines, and as mentioned, they're debilitating. It feels like 1,000 white hot nails piercing your brain. I can't imagine living as long as he did with headaches as bad as they seemed. On the other hand, well, I'm not sure I even have another hand. What do you do in that situation? When every marvel of modern medical science fails to yield any answers to excruciating and inexplicable pain, is it really fair for us to tell them they just have to live with it? I'm not here to start a philosophical or ethical debate. I'm only saying that I understand why he did it, and that if it were me, I may have just made the same decision. I always try to see every viewpoint involved, not just my own. Sometimes it's really hard, and in situations like these, I'm thankful I'm not standing in my client's shoes. I really don't know how I would deal with it. I'm sure the family understood that he didn't do this out of anger or upset. He wasn't intoxicated. He hadn't done it to make anyone wrong. He just needed to end his incessant pain. But it doesn't change the fact that they lost someone near and dear to them. I genuinely wish I could say the right thing to make their pain go away, but I'd only be reiterating what they already knew. And sometimes just listening is better than anything I could ever say. But I offered my condolences for what they were worth, and after a few more moments, he returned to the living room. We quietly and quickly continued our job, and once the floor was clean, we needed to see how bad the vent was. It was pretty bad. It was evident that when he fell, his head landed right next to the vent. Due to the newest hole in his head, he bled out almost directly into the vent. In order to determine how far back the blood went, I removed the cover and reached my double-gloved hand into the vent. More blood than I expected had made its way down there. My hand went almost wrist-deep into a large mass of gelatinous blood. It was like sticking your hand into a bowl of pudding. However, despite the amount in the vent, it hadn't traveled very far, and we were able to extract it and clean it without having to cut into the floor or remove the vent. Apparently, our earlier observer's curiosity was contagious, as his departure was soon followed by the entrance of the decedent's son. He was in his 20s, if I had to guess. When he opened the door, he stopped and stared in what appeared to be angry silence. He had walked in right as I was removing my very blood-stained top glove. And when I saw the look on his face, I felt like he was going to make a move and attack me. He knew I had nothing to do with his father's death, but the look on his face said someone was responsible and I was the one in his sight. Luckily, his mother came in right behind him and tried to gently guide her son out of the room. And in doing so, she broke his silence. He shook his mother's hands off of him and started sobbing. He yelled through his tears, Why did he have to do this? His mother hugged him, and she led him out of the room. She looked at me and mouthed an apology, although no apology was needed. These are the times that are most challenging for us. It's not the blood, the brains, and the skull fragments embedded in the wall. It's not the rotten odor of a decomposing body or feces smeared on the floor. It's the raw, uncensored, and unscripted human emotion that is invoked in the wake of death. We realized that at this point we needed to be done and gone, not for our sake, but for the families. We closed the door to the bedroom and completed our work. So those are the similarities between the two jobs. Two completely different people suffering unimaginable and incurable pain who decided that they had had enough, and they did what was necessary to end that pain once and for all. I won't tell you what to think. I will tell you that I can't blame either of them for the choices they made. Sure, it's sad and it's heartbreaking that there was no known way to help them, but nobody really knows what they would do until they find themselves in that position. I don't tell you this story to make you question your thoughts about suicide. The truth is that the majority of people who commit suicide or are even considering it all have one thing in common. They need help. The type of help may differ from person to person, but the fact that they are in need remains constant. Unfortunately, as you've just heard, that help may be unattainable for some, but that shouldn't prevent us from doing everything we can to try. You guys have followed with me for a little while, and I hope I have conveyed my experiences in a manner that shows you all aspects of my industry. We've encountered a few who've tried to discredit the entire industry and claim it's a scam or some sort of ripoff. I realize that these people haven't taken one step in my shoes, and I quietly laugh them off. They've never had to see their family members' blood and brains splayed across a wall. They've never had to return from a business trip only to be met with the stench of death and their spouse's lifeless corpse in their marital bed. I certainly don't wish it on them, but I know that if ever they do need someone like me, well, they're quickly going to learn the taste of crow. If my job were easy, it wouldn't be a job, and the turnover in the industry wouldn't be as high as it is. Many think they can, but few actually can walk in death's wake. Thank you for listening to The Cleaning of John Doe. Today's episode was produced by Resonate Recordings. I wanted to take a moment to introduce you to a podcast that you might enjoy. It's called Death's Door. I discovered this podcast when I was thinking up names for my own show, and Death's Door seemed to sum up my show, but it was taken. Damn it. I decided to listen, and I'm glad I did. It's an unbiased podcast that highlights and investigates a death row case from America's death row. If that's not cool enough, what I really enjoy about the podcast is that it profiles all types of cases from the beginning of the crime all the way up to where the case stands today. The death penalty is a controversial subject, but this show is for everyone. The host does not advocate for or against the death penalty, which is pretty cool. The host is an attorney with experience in criminal law, and law surrounding the death penalty are her passion. Here, let's take a listen. I've got an audio clip for you.
Welcome to Death's Door Podcast, a podcast that explores some of the most haunting cases from America's death row. I'm the host, Dominique Mix, and I hope you'll join me weekly as I explore cases of the innocent and guilty, the executed and the exonerated, all of whom have one thing in common. They all know what it's like to look through the bars of a cell on death row. From the crime to the case's conclusion, I explore evidence, corruption, characters, and, of course, the crime itself. You can find the show on the Acast app, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or the podcast app of your choice. I hope you'll join in, and in the meantime, don't forget to hold your loved ones tight.
Okay, so let's take up this week's winner. This week's winner is Lisa Totten. I hope I'm saying that right. It's T-O-T-T-E-N. Congratulations, Lisa, and be sure to email me your t-shirt size and your mailing address. You can reach out to me at info@thecleaningofjohndoe.com. Be sure to subscribe and review us on iTunes. It really helps. I can't express my gratitude enough for all the love and support we've been receiving so far. You guys are all awesome. If you truly enjoy what you're hearing, help spread the word to your friends, family, and coworkers. As a thank you to our listeners, we'll be giving away 8 $25 Amazon gift cards just in time for the holidays. For more information, head over to the Cleaning of John Doe's Facebook page and get in on our giveaways. Gift card winners will be announced on our Tuesday, December 5th episode, so stay tuned. Thanks for listening to The Cleaning of John Doe. Please tune in next week for The Writing on the Walls, a horrific story about a devastating homicide.